are all set to go here. Stu and Matt here, the four-hour outdoorsman. And like I say every week, thank you, Brandon, for having that young man in the studio with you right there. Is he gone yet?
No, he's still
Daniels
here.
Is there?
Anderson Daniels is still here with us.
Still on.
I tell you what, I just got a text from my wife. She listens to the Homegrown Show every weekend, and of course I do on the way to the studio as well. You sound as good as you ever have, man. I think the last time I heard you live was at the State Fair, I think, a couple of years back, whatever. But you never, none of you guys come to the east side of St. Paul. That's where I am, pal. I got to go that way, you know.
I'm northwest.
Yes, you are. Northwest suburbs. Hey, welcome, everybody, to the Four Outdoorsmen. I'm by myself tonight. Both Mark and Sam are doing hockey things with their kids, and I'm trying to think, what's their priorities, family or the Four Outdoorsmen or Stu Man? So they threw me under the bus, and I'm here by myself. But I tell you what, we're going to change a little bit because we got great guests. We got Mark Schutz, a guide who's going to take me fishing on Minnetonka this week. And we got Kurt Walbeck from Outdoor Bound TV. He's going to be on as well. But a friend of mine, Lonnie Dupre, is an explorer. He's been all around the world. He has climbed Denali in the winter solo by himself, the first person ever to do that. And 20 years ago, he went to Greenland, and he and his buddy circumnavigated Greenland 6,000 miles by dog sled and kayak. And they have not been back in 20 years. They're going back. They left today to go back to Greenland to see the changes of Greenland and how not only the changes of the topography and all that and the climate change, but the people themselves, how that has changed in Greenland. And I did an interview with him. We just BS'd for about an hour and a half yesterday, and I saved about 15, 20 minutes. And we're going to start the show off with this little interview with Lonnie Dupre. Check it out. Lonnie Dupre from Grand Marais, and he's, I think, would you describe yourself as an explorer? If you had to describe yourself with one word, what would Lonnie Dupre be?
Well, I mean, I guess Arctic explorer or polar explorer, that's kind of what I did mostly in the early days. And I guess I'm still doing a bit of that now. But and mixed in with a little bit of mountaineering as well.
You know, I know I've read your book. What was it called? On Top. What's that one called? The book of
Alone at the Top.
It's a great book. It's a great book. And I have no idea who I gave it to, but I probably won't get it back. But it's a great bag. But we're talking with Lonnie Dupre again. He's gonna be doing a thing called Greenland 2022, Pulling for the Planet here coming up. He's leaving tomorrow, and Lonnie Dupre's got a hell of a background. You've been doing exploring and expeditions and all that for many, many years. You circumnavigated Greenland with your buddy John with kayak and sleds, 6,000 miles plus, trekked 3,000 miles with dogs across Canadian Arctic, first guy to climb Denali solo in January, and I think that took you 5 or 6 attempts? How long?
I can't even keep track of myself. I think four tries, and I made it, and finally made it in 2015.
You know, I respect you, man. Navigated the North Pole in the summer. You did Mount Quincy Adams and Mount Wood. That was, I think, one of your most recent climbs, I think.
I did a solo ridge rock of Quincy Adams. It's a very high peak in the Wrangell-St. Elias mountain range, and then we climbed Mount Wood, which is a 15,000 foot peak in the winter. It was the first winter ascent there and the Kluane ice fields.
How did you go from just loving the outdoors, loving exploring, loving winter? How'd you go right from there and flip over, but to gradually progress to being so concerned about global warming?
Well, you know, it's anything, you know, like whether you're a sportsman liking to ice fish or go snowmobiling or what have you, I see the threat of snow leaving northern Minnesota to our summer or our winters not being as long as they used to be. And of course, the sea ice up in the Arctic Ocean is melting away, and people in Greenland can no longer dog sled in certain areas of their hunting grounds because of the ice is gone as well. So I guess it's a little bit, I'm just I just worried about those things, you know, because I mean, remember years when we go ice fishing in just north of the Twin Cities, we'd be able to go ice fishing the day after Thanksgiving.
Oh, yeah.
On some of those lakes just north of the cities. And you can't do that. And it's so it's slowly warming, and we're slowly losing our four seasons here. So it's and it's happening everywhere. And you know, it's difficult to see, not really sure how our society is going to fix that problem. But I mean, I don't think we are going to be able to do anything in a hurry about it. But anyways, It's just been on my mind for a couple of decades now.
Have you been to, you're going to go up to spend some time with the Polar Inuit, I think is what you call it, right? The locals, the natives up there. And you, the last time you saw them, was it in 2002 when you were with John Heschler? Or have you?
I was with John Holzer.
Holzer, okay.
Holzer from Australia, yeah.
Right.
And so we... We ended up circumnavigating Greenland. We started the southern part of 3,000 miles by kayak in the southern part of Greenland, and the northern part of Greenland we did by dog team.
Yeah.
And that was quite a remarkable trip. So we are going back now for the first time in 20 years, and to see what kind of changes have been made. Or has happened to Greenland, both not just the environment, but also the culture of the Polar Inuit that live there.
This is going to be this is going to be so much fun for you. I know it's a lot of work, and you have a message to share with the entire world. You're going to do a lot of research and all that. Do you think you're going to see physical changes? I imagine you will. I mean, because you know what it looked like, and you have photographs and everything from 20 years ago.
Oh yeah, I mean, there's glaciers that will be no longer. There when we arrive, I'm sure of that. We can see that via satellite imagery. But just what I'm really curious about is how are the Inuit people adapting to this warming planet?
Right.
Because they're people of ice and snow, right? They need ice and snow to be able to travel from one place to the other because they travel over frozen fjord ice. Because it's too mountainous to travel over land between communities. Plus, the whole coast of Greenland is so indented with fjords and bays and stuff. It's impossible to travel that shoreline. So you have to do it either in the summertime by a boat or in the wintertime by dog team. And of course, so as they're starting to lose more and more of their ice over the last several years, they become kind of landlocked in the winter to these small villages.
Have you been in touch with anybody since 2002? Anybody from there?
You know, periodically, but not a whole lot. But you know what has changed? Because when I lived there 20 years ago, you know, there was no internet, there was no satellite phone, there wasn't, you know, all this stuff that we have today to communicate.
Yeah.
And now, of course, these small villages are hooked to satellite, and so they can get internet and Facebook and, you know, all the social media stuff that comes along with it. So here they are, this really isolated community that is tied in with the rest of the world via social media, a world that they may or may not ever see. And so you kind of wonder what goes through the heads of the young people there,
right,
that are trying to figure out their life. Should I become a hunter, or should I maybe try to go to school in some faraway place to do something else?
Yeah. You wonder, it's, I know you talked about the numbers. I read some stories and interviews with you about how many people are up there, how many villages are up there. Are there kids there right now thinking, I don't want to do this anymore? It's almost like Amish communities, you know what I mean? There's more world out there. Should I go out there and explore more world, or do I just stay here and be tradition?
Yeah, of course, they're struggling with that, right? Because they also, it's kind of a catch 22, because if they try to go to college further south in southern Greenland or to Denmark, they're really family oriented, so they get really homesick quick.
Oh yeah.
When they're away, and a lot of times they'll drop out of school just so they can get back home.
Yeah.
And so it's this push pull thing, and then once they're home and they're there for, you know, a few weeks, then they're back in the old ways of, you know, whatever the village life has to offer.
Yeah.
Which is, for a lot of people wouldn't be anywhere near enough. For some people, they really enjoy that solitude and simplicity of life. But it push pulls on these young folks.
You know, it's amazing, because when I was reading the stuff you were talking about, that even you, who has been all over the world, you've traveled, you've hiked, you've climbed, you've done more things than 99.9% of the people in this world. And even it's blows you away that they can survive like they do up there.
Yeah, I mean, it's there's little pockets of these indigenous people everywhere, like in the Kalahari Desert to, you know, Brazil to, you know, but these people, of course, are living on the very edge of and a very extreme environment, right? These are the northernmost habitants in the world, and they found a way of eking out a living there, quite comfortable, quite happy. But it's different than where we live, you know. There, they have 5 months of darkness that they deal with, and then on the other end of that, it's 24 hours daylight. So in middle October, the sun goes down, and it stays down until the middle of February, and then it comes up quite quickly, and then it's 24 hours of daylight. So they can get a lot of stuff done in the summer with all that light.
Yeah, you know, other than going there just for your own personal interest to see how they have adapted, how things have changed, not only physically with that area, but the people themselves, are you doing experiments along your 4-month journey there as well, like you have in the past?
Well, what we're going back for primarily is to create a feature film.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a really good film crew out of Germany that's going to join us, a cinematographer, a really good sound technician. And then we are going to travel traditionally by dog team from village to village, visiting some of my old friends and old colleagues, and bringing back to them pictures I took 20 years ago.
Oh, fun, yeah.
Where they were actually, some of them have probably passed away since then, but some of the kids are now adults. And this is really going to open the door for conversation on how things have changed for everybody.
Right.
And that's basis of the documentary. So it's not a sporting or exploratory expedition, more than a really in-depth, hard-to-get documentary.
Yeah.
Because of the conditions.
I think that would really be interesting. You're going to be there about 4 or 5 months. How soon do you think the documentary then will be available for the public?
Well, it will take about a year to get the documentary ironed out. It's a long, slow editing process, and also very expensive. So it's going to take a little time, but we're hoping a year from this coming May, we hope to have it out.
You know, I'll tell you what, you're smarter than I gave you credit for, because I looked at your film crew and all of that, and most of these people are women. You're not stupid. You're not stupid. Got some good-looking ladies coming with you.
Well, I always felt that we men have run this world since the beginning of time. I think it's time that we have women kind of take over, because we haven't done a very good job as men taking care of this world of ours. And I think we would be better off if we had women running our planet for a while. And so I take people that are the most qualified, and the most qualified happen to be women.
It's a good choice. I tell you, I think most families are better off when women are pretty much in charge. And don't tell my wife. Oh, she's out there listening right now. I'm not kidding. That's the truth. I have no idea I told my wife, Diana, recently, you know, she's 75 or 74, and I'm 70. I said, you can't die yet. I need all the passwords. I know nothing about our finances. I can't get into Netflix or nothing, man. Yeah. Hey, I'll tell you what. Yeah, I know you have always had a concern about where we're going as far as the world. And I think one of your biggest obstacles to overcome is the fact that since global warming, and some people believe it's happening, some people don't, but if it's such a slow, deliberate change, the average person just doesn't take it seriously.
Well, you know, the thing is most folks are, so caught up in everyday life, whether it's, making lunch for the kids for school, or getting kids off to school, or it's making the mortgage payment, or going to buy groceries, or taking care of bills, or digging out of the snowbank. It's very, very difficult to have enough energy left over to think about climate change or global warming.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's why we need to. That's why we have politicians. We are working. We are doing our part. They need to do their part.
Can I follow you while you're taking this trip? You've done that before. Or is everything going to be just hanging on until you do the documentary?
No, we'll be posting on some of the social media, some of our social media, but we'll also be putting up a blog on LonnieDupree.com.
Yeah.
If you go on to that website, there's a blog page that we're going to keep updated.
I'm going to ask you one more question, because I read this, and I think it was an interview with you in the Washington Post. Well, I tell you what, you've had a number of awards and accommodations, and I get a kick out of this. Sportsman's Medal from Mikhail Gorbachev gave you a medal, which is, that's got to be something special. The Polar Tech Challenge Award, and Winter Olympics in 1994. What does that mean in 1994? How were you involved in the Winter Olympics?
Ceremonies of the Winter Olympics in Lillehammer, Norway.
Cool.
And, it was to bring an environmental message from Lillehammer to Nagano, Japan. And the first leg of it was by dog team, and I was in charge of that part.
What a thrill. But here, But here's something else. I've looked at your entire background. I know all about you. But I got to hear about you got an award for the 2015 Most Badass Adventure. What was that?
Was when I did the solo winter ascent of Denali in January.
That's a cool award. Badass. You're a badass, man. When I was reading the Washington Post, I read this, and I don't know how you find this out, how you can document this, but your concern, of course, is if all the ice starts melting as it has been, and the people up there can't go from point A to point B, their whole life is going to change. You or somebody said that the methane between the ice near the North Pole is 25 times more potent as a greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide.
That is correct. I mean, it's not just locked under the Arctic Ocean, but it's locked in underneath the frozen taiga in Siberia and the tundra in like Alaska and Canada. And so that methane slowly gets released into the air when that biomatter that gets decomposed creates that methane and releases that into the air once it starts thawing. And so that's something we really have to worry about in a huge way. And that's why we got to curb our consumption of fossil fuels now, so we can kind of stave that off. And what we need to do is try to create. What we're hoping to do is lessen the severity of the storms, of the flooding, of the hurricanes and tornadoes and things like that.
Yeah.
Because that's what really is getting produced from all this heat.
Well, listen, we're going to let you go. I tell you, Lonnie, this is great. This is Lonnie Dupree, of course. He's going to be going to spend some time in Greenland with the Polar Inuit, I think is how you say that. And they're going to have a documentary, I think it's being called Greenland 2022, Pulling for the Planet. I'm excited for, the results. I want to find out exactly what happened. When you come back, we're going to have you on, of course. Next time you come to the Twin Cities and do talks like you do around the Twin Cities, I'd love to meet with you and have dinner and just BS, because I think it's a wonderful message. You're a great guy, and I'm pulling for you, and I'm praying for you.
Yeah, let's do that, Stu. I appreciate everything you've done so far.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun. All right, take care of yourself. Be safe. By the way, this guy's leaving tomorrow, and that's nice of him to take some time to be on the Four Outdoorsman tonight. Hell of a man. Be safe. Do what you got to do, and we'll stay in touch.
Thanks so much.
Take care, buddy. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Checking in with the Four Outdoorsmen. Find them at mybobcountry.com under the weekend tab.
It's no secret that we love the city of Devil's Lake, North Dakota. Not just the thrill that comes with its unbelievable hunting and fishing, but everything that Devil's Lake has to offer. You can choose from nearly 30 restaurants, many hotel and motel options, a dozen campsites, theater, golfing, hiking, nearby casino, or just plain exploring. Walleyes and jumbo perks, well, they might draw you here, but Devil's Lake itself will keep you coming back. Hey, trust Drew Man on this one. Visit devilslakend.com.
Tired of losing your valuables down the ice fishing hole? Our friend Bill Katz with BK Outdoors LLC has the most simple, affordable solution on the market. Katz covers are a strong polycarbonate hole cover you can stand on and fish through. Your phone, electronics, keys, kids, and pets can now be safe with this simple solution. Go to katzcovers.com. That's KATZKOVERZ.com. Made in Minnesota, a veteran-owned company, you can order yours directly or visit one of Bill's great retail partners to get yours now.
Ely, Minnesota just screams trout fishing, gang. And I'll tell you what, Arrowhead Outdoors Bait and Tackle has more trout gear and advice than any other bait store in the state. Arrowhead specializes in lake and stream trout fishing. And if you've never tried it, Arrowhead rents some very nice houses to help you guys find some trout. Hey, whether you want to fish locally or take a trip to the Boundary Waters by dog sled, well, you're going to be taken care of. Rainbow, brook, brown, splake, and lake trout. Arrowhead Outdoors Bait and Tackle in Ely, Minnesota is where you need to start. Trout fishing is on fire in Ely, Minnesota.
Power Lodge, and only Power Lodge, has teamed up with Financial One for an incredible winter marine sales event. Pick out a qualifying boat or pontoon, and there's no payments and free storage until April 2022. Let's get this straight. Pick out a boat now, no payments and free storage until April 2022. Make next summer incredible for you and your family. Go to Power Lodge right now in Ramsey, Brainerd, or Onamia, online at powerlodge.com.
Buy a voucher good for four people to jump for 1 hour at Air Max in St. Cloud. Test your abilities in the dodgeball court or foam pit. There's even a court for the littlest ones to jump with their parents. Only on DealsOnRadio.com.
Deals on Radio.
Progressive presents Forest Metaphors
about bundling your home and auto.
In sports, three goals is a hat trick. And when you bundle your home and auto with Progressive, you get a hat trick of great savings and round-the-clock protection. So you might be thinking, wait, that's two things. A hat trick is three. But in this metaphor, great savings counts as two goals, and so does round-the-clock protection. So it's like four goals, and that's more than three. It's basic math.
Forest Metaphors, presented by Progressive. Bundle and protect today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Discount not available in all states or situations.
Exergen wants you to know about an important study just released by the FDA. It confirms what the medical community has known all along. Non-contact thermometers are not accurate, and they fail to meet FDA requirements for accuracy and labeling. With new strains of COVID on the rise, we can't afford to tolerate the rampant false temperature readings from non-contact thermometers. You need Exergen thermometers because they are accurate and backed by over 100 clinical studies. Be sure, be accurate with Exergen. Learn more at Exergen.com.
Total Country Bob FM.
Hey, let's get right to it. We got a friend on the air right now, Mark Schutz. Mark Schutz, Guide Service. How are you, Mark? Are you there, buddy?
I'm doing good. How are you guys tonight?
Every day is a gift. I tell you, we just said, how are you guys tonight? Super Stu is by himself because Mark and Sam, I think, are doing some hockey stuff with the little kids tonight. That's what I think is happening. And so they threw me under the bus, and I'm the only man in town.
Well, that's awesome. I like hockey, too. And my son plays hockey, and I'm happy to be on, Stru.
Yeah, good for them. And I know what it's like, especially when I was a young guy and raising my three kids, our three kids, it was, okay, you had practice twice a week and games one day a week. And I was coach of the kids for a couple of years as well. Now it's 5-6 days a week. It's a whole different ball game, and I'm glad I'm not in it, to be honest. I got grandkids. We have an opportunity to go follow their games. I love it. I love sports, always will. But I think it's too much for these kids. There's more to life than that. Never mind. Let's talk about fishing. Are you in Minnetonka right now?
Yeah. I'm not on Minnetonka right now. I was on Minnetonka today.
And how did it go?
Fishing was really good, Stru. We're on some really good crappies right now, and we caught some sunfish. We got the big screen TV with a camera on it, so we're watching fish pretty much all day long.
You know, I tell you what, I'm all excited about this because you're nice enough to take my son Joe and my grandson George and me out there for a couple of hours Wednesday, and yeah. I don't think I've ever been in one of the houses like you have that has where you can actually see the fish on screen and looking at your bait and kind of snuffing it and swimming away. I think that's got to be fun, man. It's like playing a video game.
Oh, it's amazing, and it's really neat to see anybody's face who's never seen that before, a fish on a really big screen color TV, and it's neat. Kids and adults can experiment with what works, and you can actually practice through on the fish, you know, what works and what doesn't work. And
it's
very exciting. It gives kids a lot of confidence, too, because they're actually seeing fish, and it makes a lot more sense to them.
I'm a little concerned that George is going to be spoiled, you know, because I'm still one of these. I'm okay being outside with an ice auger and a 5-gallon bucket, and I've got my Vexilar. That's all I need. This is going to be a treat for me as well. It's going to be a great experience. But if it gets kids more involved in fishing, That's the goal, and you've accomplished the goal.
Right on. Tomorrow is Martin Luther King Day, so a lot of kids have tomorrow off, so hopefully going to be out there with a bunch of kids. And the more kids we can get fishing, the better. And, you know, get them out of that video game world all the time and, you know, get them out fishing, the better.
I know you, I met you a couple of years ago with my buddy Boomer and up on Mille Lacs, and you love guiding smallmouth on Mille Lacs. And the day he went out with us, I was in my son's boat because I was nice enough to let the other guys go with the big shot guide. And that was nice. So I never had an opportunity to fish with you and try to catch some nice smallmouth. My goal is still one of these days to catch a 5-pound smallmouth. I think I caught a 4-13 once years ago in the Boundary Waters. But the smallies have come back.
Well, we can make it happen, Stru, for sure. And we got to get you on the calendar right away to do that because it's really busy up there in the springtime for those big smallies. And I'd love to take you out fishing, Stru. And anybody else there who's listening, I'd love to take them out for some big smallies.
I'll tell you what, when I get home tonight, I'll get a glass of wine with my gorgeous wife. And she loves summer fishing. She loves being in a boat when the sun is shining. She's not the cold outside kind of person. I'm not that much either, but she loves fishing. I'd love to have her catch a big smallmouth as well, or even a big walleye. So I will call you or text you tonight, and we'll look at dates, and let's try to work something out for that as well. Hey, back to you. We're talking with Mark Schutz, and he's a fish. It's called Mark Schutz Fishing Guide Service out of Mille Lacs in the summer, Lake Minnetonka in the winter. And you're mostly a panfish guy in the winter, right?
Right on. All yep, right. I guide for mostly crappies and sunfish. We do catch some northern pike on tip-ups and largemouth bass. And today on the camera, we even saw walleye, so that was pretty cool.
I'm gonna throw you under the bus a little bit because early on in this little interview conversation, you mentioned that you had a really good day today and da-da-da-da-da. I'm going to tape that part of this conversation, send it to my son Joe and my grandson George, and we're gonna hope it's still there in a couple of days because we're looking forward to it.
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah, spread the word. And, you know, if I can get more people out any way I can, the better, especially kids and teaching kids. It's kind of my passion, bringing kids out and families out. And, you know, lately, too, I've had a lot of husbands and wives and boyfriends and girlfriends. And I got a very big corporate guide trip coming out. So, it's good. It's fun. And it's really nice to see people who have never fished before out there ice fishing and getting a good experience and having a good time.
You know what bothers me again about the sports kind of thing? I love them dearly, and I still play softball myself. I do all kinds of things, and but my wife and I had a Christmas get together with two of our grandkids that was postponed last year because of COVID, and here it came rescheduled again this year, and we gave them about a month's notice, but all of a sudden, you know, volleyball or something got in the way, and they were so concerned about missing a practice or a game that they, you know, they maybe, oh, maybe it'll affect my position on the team, and that kind of bothers me. So I think we need to reemphasize what's important about life and getting kids outside and what and learning about the outdoors is as important as any other thing, I believe.
I believe that too, Stu, and that's a really good point you just brought up. Yeah, I'd like to see as many kids out fishing as I can get out or as go out. And, you know, like I said, seeing kids smile and for them to actually have success on the ice and learn about fishing, it's priceless. And, you know, you take some pictures of the kids with smiles on it with their mom or their dad and having fun. It's, you know, that's something you can put up by the mantle, and, you know, it's just something that you can cherish for a long, long time.
You can't put a dollar value on memories, that's for sure.
Right on.
You know, as a matter of fact, I had a really good career selling real estate. My wife and I did for many, many years. But every time our kids would get together, still to this day, nobody talks about how many homes we sold. Nobody told how much money you make. All we talk about are the fishing trips to the Boundary Waters or a fly-in trip to Quetico National Park. That's the stuff that you talk about. Those are the memories.
Right on.
Yeah. That's much more important.
Yeah. I have lots of clients, and they still talk about how many fish they caught or how they had, like, a little small competition, like, you know, one guy against the boat, against the other guy in the boat, and against the wife in the boat or against the girlfriend in the boat. And, you know, sometimes you do the who can catch the most or who can catch the biggest fish or, you know, that kind of stuff they remember a long, long time.
Yeah. Hey, let's talk about, I've followed your background and your Facebook stuff for a long, long time. And there's something called full throttle fishing that I have a question about. And I think it needs to be exposed more or brought out. Full throttle fishing sports league is what it's called. Tell us what that's all about.
Full throttle fishing is my business, and we do a lot of fishing events. And we've done all kinds of fishing events. We've done faith-based fishing events. We've done charity fishing events. We've done big professional fishing events. But we do a lot of fishing events of all different sorts, and brings a lot of people together. We've even done online fishing events nowadays, and because of COVID and stuff like that, we've done the. Each year, we've been a big participant in the Teen Challenge event on Gull Lake with Al Lindner.
Right.
And we do the Walleye Dan Feed the Hungry tournament that helps support Feed the Hungry. And you know, I like the big picture events where you're helping other people out and doing stuff like that, like kids events and all kinds of stuff like that. Anything that we can bring more people to fishing and, you know, and expose them to something positive is great in my mind. And yeah, it's been very, very good.
And you're feeling good about it. I'll tell you what, you've been doing this for about 20 years as a professional guide. What was your real job before you became a professional fishing guide?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think it just evolved. You know, at first, you know, that it was like I used to fish tournaments, and at first I started doing good in tournaments, and then after the tournament was over that I was, you know, pretty good at, I would have, like, people come up and say, hey, you know, will you take us out fishing sometime? And, you know, do you mind? We'll pay you and everything.
Yeah.
And after that got, you know, spread on a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more, I would say probably after, you know, I don't know, 10 years, and it just got better and better and better, and, you know, there were more clients and everything like that. So it grew just by word of mouth mostly, and, you know, it's a fun job. There's a lot of nice people out there who fish, and I always say I'm in the smile business.
Attaboy. Yeah,
when you're out there guiding people and they catch a big fish, they're smiling.
Oh, yeah.
And you take a picture of them, and they got a nice smile on their face, that's a good day. Right there.
Like I said, you're making memories. Now, if you had to make a choice, I might have asked you this last time we spoke, and it's been a while since you've been on the air, but if you had to make a choice, is it smallmouth in the summer or panfish in the winter?
That's a great question. And to be very honest with you, I like both.
I didn't ask you that. You can only choose one.
Smallmouth are amazing, Crappies are super fun and super social. You know, you get a big group of people in there, or you get like two people or three people. You know, it's really nice to hang out with them and talk and make jokes and, you know, have a few sandwiches or fish tacos, you know, so it's good.
Hey, listen.
But I like both. Smallmouth, you know, is incredible, incredible action, incredible fighting fish. There's so much excitement catching smallies, and, you know, you can't beat topwater smallies. That's pretty hard to beat. So I'd have to say overall, topwater smallies would be probably my favorite.
Hey, let's talk about this winter fishing right now. We've got a couple minutes left. What was working for you today? What kind of bait, how deep, all that kind of good stuff?
That's a great question. Today we're in 18 feet of water, and we were just using really small jigs. Waxworm seemed to be working the best. And to be honest with you, when you see them on the camera, that works the best.
Yeah, I imagine it does, yeah.
Yeah, so that's a really good technique to have the camera set up. So that helps a lot. And, you know, a good tip, too, for crappies is they always bite up. So if you have your bait below them, usually they won't bite as well. But if you have it above them, and just slightly above them, they'll always kind of feed up. So that's a good tip. And, you know, if you have electronics, always look for the line above the fish. So, yeah. I mean, your bait will be above the fish, but keep it above the fish so the fish can barely swim up and get it.
I'm looking forward to it, sir. Mark, just how do people find you if they want to hire you as a guy for 2022?
Yes, you can easily go on Facebook, and you can look for Mark Schutz, S-C-H-U-T-Z,
right.
Fishing Guide Service, and you can find me.
We're going to try to get you some business, buddy. I'll tell you what, I'm going to talk to you tomorrow. We'll talk about Wednesday. My son, George, is about a 13-year-old kid, is all excited about it, and so is his dad, my son, my grandson, rather, George, and so is Joe. And I'm looking forward to getting out there. We'll figure out where we're going to meet, what we have to bring, and let's have a good time.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to having you guys out.
We're proud to spread the word for you, buddy.
Thank you so much, Drew, and I'll spread the word about you guys, too.
It's a lot of fun. Laughter and learning is a good thing, and we'll combine both of those on Wednesday night.
Sounds good, buddy. I can't wait.
All right, take care of yourself, sir.
Yep, thank you guys for having me on.
You bet. Right. Going to be right back with Kurt Wahlbeck from Outdoor Bound TV, a good friend of ours. Just came back from Devil's Lake.
Listen to Total Country Bob FM anytime, anywhere, online at mybobcountry.com.
Call DeZiel Heating and AC when you need dependable, affordable, and professional furnace repair at your West Metro or Wright County home. DeZiel knows the feeling when your furnace goes out during a cold winter day. If you have a unit that's ready to roll over, DeZiel's team of licensed and certified HVAC technicians are here to help. DeZiel's trucks are stocked to repair any furnace system and can get your house warm and cozy again. Suspect a problem? Call the top dog today before your furnace goes out. They will come running to your rescue before it is too late. DeZielHVAC.com.
Arrowhead Outdoors in Ely, Minnesota. A symbiotic relationship. I've patronized both for many years and I'm going to do so for a lot more. The Minnesota State Northern Pike record was caught right here. And Chris and Steve have day-use fish houses for you to catch those pike, walleyes, crappie, or trout. No one in Ely, Minnesota carries more trout tackle and equipment than Arrowhead Outdoors. Experience the winter wonderland of Ely by starting with, yeah, trust Truman on this one, Arrowhead Outdoors.
Crystal Welding in Maple Grove is your Hinneker snowplow dealer. Hinneker's Quick Hitch and Trip Edge systems makes removing snow easy. Made in Minnesota, Hinneker plows are perfect for commercial or residential use. Have a Bobcat? No problem. Hinneker makes a plow for that too. Crystal Welding in Maple Grove also services all makes and models of plows and salt spreaders. Go to crystalwelding.com.
Crystal Welding gets the job done. No jobs are small because we do it all.
Hey, let's get back to the basics because Devil's Lake, North Dakota is the place. You know, right now, that's fishing for walleyes and jumbo perch. And Kurt Wahlbeck of Outdoor Bound TV is our next guest on the show, and he and his crew just finished a few days there, a place Kurt calls one of his favorite fishing destinations in this country. 170,000 acres of water gives you the opportunity to keep five walleyes a day and 10 in possession, And if your objective is jumbo perch, that number jumps to 20. Hey, we've been privileged to visit Devil's Lake every year for many years, and literally every trip, it's tough to head back to the Twin Cities. If you love to fish, you got to check out devilslakend.com.
Power Lodge, and only Power Lodge, has teamed up with Financial One for an incredible winter marine sales event. Pick out a qualifying boat or pontoon, and there's no payments and free storage until April 2022. Let's get this straight. Pick out a boat now, no payments, and free storage until April 2022. Make next summer incredible for you and your family. Go to Power Lodge right now in Ramsey, Brainerd, or Onamia, online at powerlodge.com.
Total Country Bob FM.
Hey, we're back. Thanks, everybody, for listening to the Four Outdoorsmen. Have a lot of fun laughing and learning on the Four Outdoorsmen. We're going to do both right now with Kurt Walbeck of Outdoor Bound TV. Kurt, good evening, sir.
Hey, good evening, Stru. How are you doing?
Every day's a gift. I say it all the time, and I mean it every day. Where are you guys right now? Are you still on the Missouri River down there someplace?
No, we actually just got back and back in the studio here until tomorrow, and then we head down to the mighty Mississippi for a little jumbo perch action down there.
Good for you, man. Like I said, you guys aren't very set in. You know, when I said, I texted today, or maybe I posted on Facebook, responded to Lindsay or somebody and said, you guys aren't very sedentary. And I thought, then I thought, did I spell that thing correctly? You know, one of those things. I don't know what the hell it is, but you guys are always on the roll, on the move. Good for you guys. Hey, I'll tell you what, you just came back from Devil's Lake, North Dakota. Tell us how it went.
Oh, it was a fantastic trip. I tell you what, it was the perch fishing and the walleye fishing right now are absolutely on fire. And we had just a really good shoot out there. We had actually planned to be there for 3 days. Believe it or not, we filmed two complete shows in 2 days, which in our world is a heck of a blessing. So we were sorry to leave early, but we'll take the extra day off because, as you said, we've been on the road pretty much straight through. But I love going to Devil's Lake. That, you know, I've said it all the time. It's one of my favorite multi-species fishing spots, I think, in North America. And this trip was no disappointment, I'll tell you that.
Did you ever go to Devil's Lake and do one of the cast and blasts like they promote all the time? You know, go shoot a few birds in the morning and go fishing for walleyes in the afternoon?
You know, we've done that quite a bit. In fact, last fall, we got a chance to do that with our good buddy, Mike Leonarduzzi. He's from Wisconsin originally, now called Devil's Lake home. He's another one of those that moved out of Wisconsin and headed out to Devil's Lake. But we had an opportunity to chase birds. And you know, it's crazy because it's just world-class waterfall hunting there. And we were out of the field by, I think, 10 o'clock, and we were in the boat by 11. And I think we had a limit of walleyes in the boat by probably 1 o'clock. And we kind of looked around and said, all right, now what are we going to do?
Life's a bitch, you know, and then you die, right?
Sportsman's paradise, no doubt about it.
Life's a bitch, and then you die. Boy, you're good for you. You deserve it. You've been doing the Outdoor Bound TV for about 12 seasons right now. As a matter of fact, I had an opportunity to check out your about 2 years ago, your 10-year anniversary highlights of some of your favorite hunts and fishing stories of the 10 years. And if anybody has a chance to see that, you can find that on YouTube. Go to Outdoor Bound TV YouTube, and you'll see a bunch of past episodes from a while back. And that 10-year anniversary show was really well worth seeing.
Well, appreciate that. Thank you. And I tell you what, we have a world of fun doing this. You know, I think you and I have talked about this numerous times, that I think there's probably just about anyone that loves the outdoors would trade spots with me in a heartbeat.
Yep.
And I don't take it for granted. I love what I do, and we have a ton of fun traveling around the world and bringing those stories back to everyone here in the Midwest.
And you're healthy and able to do it. That's the name of the game right there.
Amen. Every day is a blessing, as you always say.
How are the road access to Devils, to all the places you guys wanted to go, and how deep is the ice?
Well, that's a very good question, because right now, Creole Bay, there is road access. Devil's Lake area has had quite a bit of snow. In fact, if you drive out there, you'll see the drift, and it looks a bit like the moon. So trying to drive anywhere on the lake without access, without a road plowed, will not happen. I'll tell you that right now. Creo Bay, though, is Woodland Resort, maintains roads throughout Creo Bay. So perfect spot if you want to drive your truck out. There was hundreds of trucks on the ice when we were there this week. So very good opportunity if you just want to drive out and fish. Probably a good 20 inches of ice throughout Creo Bay. So plenty of ice, not a problem. Wheelhouses out there, portables, or, you know, pretty much everything. And Woodlands does a great job of maintaining those roads all the time. Now, when you start venturing out into Pelican and East Devils and Black Tiger and some of those, many of those areas do not have roads plowed. So you need to plan transportation, either working with the guide service. As you know, you fish Devils Lake a lot in the winter, so you know snow bears are a big thing out there.
Yep.
So, and that's why they are, because they pretty much can go anywhere. And that's how all the guides are getting around out there right now. And then also anything tracked. So if you have a side-by-side or four-wheeler or whatever, wheels with chains are not going to cut it. You're going to need something with tracks. And it's mainly because when that wind blows out there and it can get strong, it's got, you know, big banks and drifts, so it's not uncommon to go across bare ice or maybe just an inch or two, and next thing you know, you're on top of a four-foot drift.
Wow.
And I watched numerous people get stuck trying to cross those drifts. Is the problem, you get cold weather, it gets a crust on top, but then it's soft snow underneath. So you need to have something, either a track vehicle, you know, or work with a guide service that uses the snow bear.
Well, I'll tell you what, people like myself only fish a half a dozen times a year, whatever. It makes sense for me to spend the money and hire these guys. And then we plan on doing that when we go up there February 3rd. We're going to be hiring some guides from Bry's Guide Service, and we're going to put a few snow bears out there. And it's just the way to go. And I'm looking forward to that a whole lot.
No, that'll be a great trip. You should hit it absolutely perfect. Right now, the perch are snapping in about 25 to 30 feet of water. So we were typically using small PK Predator tungsten spoons or just regular tungsten jigs tipped with a minnow head. They didn't like the full minnow when it was attached to a spoon or jig. They wanted just the minnow head, so they were a little fussy about that. The other thing that really is working right now and worked well for us was dead sticks. We had dangler tip downs down pretty much everywhere we were fishing with a small crappie minnow. For perch, be careful about getting too big of a minnow. You don't want a fat head or, you know, a larger crappie minnow, or excuse me, a larger walleye minnow. You want a crappie minnow for those perch. The walleyes, on the other hand, they were snapping pretty much on number five. Jig and wraps were pretty much the go-to. Again, tip bottom hook with just a minnow head for a little bit of scent, but jigging those a foot to right down on the bottom. And my favorite thing to do there is go down, pound the bottom, kind of stir up some sand, and then rip that rip and wrap. And watching them on our Markham underwater cameras, a ton of fun. And I heard Mark talking about it earlier today, and he's exactly right. If you can watch fish on camera, boy, I tell you what, it opens up a whole new world.
It's
gotta
be.
Devil's Lake is really clear right now. We were watching fish in 28 feet of water.
You were talking about the PK Predator spoon and talking about, you know, the perch are not biting on the full minnow, and you only use the minnow head. I thought the PK Predator would be too big for perch. I mean, it's got to be. That's about a 3-inch thing, isn't it?
Well, the PK spoon, the rattle spoon or the regular PK spoon is. That is quite a bit bigger. But PK now makes a tungsten Predator with a small Wyoming blade, and they always go right down to 1/8 ounce and 1/16 ounce. So those are perfect size for perch. They're only probably with the hook about 3/4 inch long. So okay. They were absolutely perfect for what we're doing there.
You know, we're talking with Kurt Walbeck of Outdoor Bound TV, and I've known the man for a number of years. He's always sharing ideas and whatnot. What I like about your show, well, I've talked to you about this before, is that it's not all about Kurt Walbeck. It's about everybody else but Kurt Walbeck, and you're on it very little. You do all the commentary and all that, and I love it. And here's something else I found interesting. I just thought about it today when I was watching your stuff. I don't think I've ever seen you in a fish house. You're out there doing the real stuff outside. Even on Lake Winnipeg, you were, and you got lucky, I think, the last time I saw you in Lake Winnipeg with the weather, but you're very seldom inside a fish house, if ever, on these shows anyway.
Well, I tell you what, I love to get around and move around, so that's not real conducive to being inside a shack, But there are certainly times, and we did have one of those days, our first day out on Devils, where we popped up the otter shacks. The wind was just too strong, and it made it tough to fish and tough to film in that wind. So we did have to pop up the otters and go to it there. But I love to be outside. I'm just an outside kind of guy. I don't sit still very well, so I like to move around a lot and find fish, I guess. And that's kind of my style of fishing. And it's nice. I love being inside the otters, too. I love it when it's 60-some degrees in there and you're nice and warm. You can have your coat off and so on. But I also really like to get out and hole hop a lot.
Hey, we hear a whole lot about high-pressure systems and how it affects fishing. I'm an armchair quarterback when it comes to fishing. You give me a jiggle stick or whatever you want to call it, and I'll fish for a couple of hours. But I don't know any of the technical stuff. Why does high-pressure systems affect fishing?
Well, I guess if I knew exactly that, I'd be doing something other than TV, probably. But what the tendency is fish in, when a high pressure moves in, fish tend to not feed as aggressively. So what we've noticed in just our travels and what we've done as the low pressure, we're coming off of a high pressure going to a low pressure, or that barometer is sinking, fish tend to be in a lot more of a feeding mood. And, you know, realistically, we've noticed it too outside of the fishing world. You know, you drive by the field on your way home from work at night, and you see 20 deer out there at 3 in the afternoon, right?
Right.
And then you can drive by there for the next 2 weeks, and there's not a deer. Well, I think all animals feel that pressure change, and it tends to put them in a more of a feeding mood. When you get those high pressures, or what we call when you get the isobars close together as well, when you get heavy winds, right? That's what creates those winds, is those isobars are tucked close together. You can really see the fish tend to get real lethargic, or what I call the fish negative. They're in a negative mood. They'll still come and look. They'll come up to a bait, but, boy, you really have to coerce them into biting.
I tell you what, I'm going to throw a curveball at you, because early on in this show, when we had the first taped interview, we got a phone call from a guy in Wright County. And he asked the wrong guy, but he's from Wright County. He said, I want to talk to one of the four outdoorsmen. I'm the only guy here tonight because the other two guys are out for the night, and more power to them. And he asked me, he said, listen, because see, I'm from Wright County, and we are getting overrun by swans. And it's to the point, it's almost not as much as, you know, remember all of a sudden we love to see a goose once in a while. Now they're like all over the place. Or turkeys. He said, the swans seem to be doing the exact same thing. What's going on, and can anything be done about that, and do we have a concern about too many swans, and is it going to go the wrong direction?
Well, you know, it's I'm a firm believer that all animals, whether it be waterfowl, fish, deer, whatever, they have a sixth sense somewhere. And I tell you what, if we could figure it out, we'd all be in a better spot. But,
yeah.
You know, there's a sixth sense there that really steer animals' activity. And waterfowl is no different. I've watched it happen with snow geese and regular Canada goose and so on, that will literally predict, if you will, some type of a weather event and so on. So, you know, I don't know if these swans are, you know, just hanging out because there's weather events going on further south. You know, Canada goose, it was very uncommon, you know, 20 years ago to see a Canada goose here in the middle of January.
Right.
But, you know, now they've kind of found a home in a lot of these places. So I think more people are feeding them. There's more open water in a lot of the residential areas that, you know, that keep ponds open and those kind of things with aerators. So, you know, maybe it's a little bit of that. Those swans are adapting to their surrounding a little bit and starting to hang around.
Another question here. You've been all over the world. I mean, New Zealand is one of your most beloved spots in the entire world. And you have fished and hunted in some deplorable conditions. What's the worst conditions you've ever endured to the point where you couldn't even do any filming, you couldn't even do any fishing or hunting? And were you ever in danger?
Well, I think probably some of our activities in the northern parts of Canada, Alberta, British Columbia, in the mountains there, I had an opportunity a number of years ago to harvest a moose 23 miles back in, and we were on foot. So coming out and packing out a moose 23 miles on foot is quite a challenge. And I got to tell you, that took 3 days to do that. It took 3 trips over 3 days to pack that moose out. And I thought on the third day that I was questioning my career choice, I'll tell you that. probably the most dangerous was in New Zealand. We were hunting Himalayan tar, which is a lot like a mountain goat here in North America, but they live on the just tops of the mountains. And we were above the clouds, and unfortunately, the cloud bank started to stir and move in, and we got ice rain. And if you know anything about climbing on top of a mountain when you're on rocks and hanging on with your fingertips, having everything coated in ice is not a great way to go.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we didn't have the gear to be able to spend the night up there, especially in an ice storm. So that one got a little bit hairy, but we were able to get out of there about around midnight that evening when it started to thaw a little bit, that we could safely start to move. But I got to tell you, that one, I said a few prayers on the way down that mountain.
We'll talk a little bit more about fishing. Got a couple of minutes here. What's the difference between, I was watching one of your shows, and you were talking about search bait and profile bait. Explain that.
Well, a search bait, I'll typically, summer or winter, when I hit a new spot, I'm going to use a search bait. So typically a jigging wrap, right? Perfect example of a search bait. Something that gets down quickly in the winter, covers a little bit bigger area. In the summer, that may be same thing. You could use a jigging wrap if you're jig fishing, or you know, if you're casting, something that covers a lot of water, gives you a little bit bigger presentation and quicker. It fishes quicker. And then once I find fish, again, whether it be summer, winter, then I start to refine the presentation. That's when I start paying attention to colors. Profile of the bait. Are they looking for minnow? Are they looking for a bug? What are they looking for? So, or worm style bait. So again, I'll use a search bait, something that fishes very quickly, gets down quickly, covers a lot of water. And really jigging wrap is kind of my go-to in a lot of those cases. And then, refine that with maybe a smaller jig or a little different color presentation or a little different profile. Maybe it's a spoon. Something like that with a little more flash. But typically a search bait designed to cover water and find fish.
Good for you, buddy. I'll tell you what. Kurt Wahlbeck, Outdoor Bound TV, I appreciate all the advice and lessons and humor and all the stories you've shared with us for a long, long time. I'm looking forward to having you and your gorgeous wife, Carla, to come out to our place in Chautauqua and have dinner with us this time. You were nice enough to put us up a couple of weeks back as well down at your place. And I tell you what, laughing and learning is a good thing, and we do that a lot with you as well. Kurt Wahlbeck, Outdoor Bound TV. Check him out. You'll love what you see. He's a good man, and thanks for being on the Four Outdoorsman, sir.
All right, Stu. Take care, and we look forward to seeing you soon.
You got it. Take care. Well, I tell you, a lot of fun, huh? Everybody, thanks for listening to the Four Outdoorsman. Mark's not here. Sam's not here. He got Struman all by himself, and I normally say, Mark Lukey's got something to say. And he'd say, get outdoors and make some memories.